It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Coming up on this week's show, ESPN Plus gobbles up more soccer rights. Sports broadcaster drops a major hint about Copa America rights. CBS keeps expanding their portfolio of sports rights. Find out which game was the most watched of the European club season so far. Learn about how to watch Liga MX games in English. Plus, we have letters from you listeners in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by a special guest co-host, which is Chris Whittingham. And Chris, Kartik is in not that chilly, but he's in Baltimore. He's up there for the United's Soccer Coaches Convention, busy at work, probably doing some networking. But it's great to have you on the show, Chris, because we've met many times, but this is the first time we have you on the podcast, and welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. In the sports radio parlance, they have a phrase, which is first-time caller, long-time listener. And that is very much the case for me. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I'm happy to be on.
Awesome. Well, for those listeners who aren't as well familiar with you as some of us are in the industry, can you give them a kind of a brief bio? As we go through the show, we'll talk more about some of the work that you do, but a brief bio of where they may know your name, or maybe they don't know your name until now.
Sure. So I've been a football commentator for about 5 years now. I've also worked in local radio and on CBS Interactive as well, doing online video. But in the footballing world, I started with CONCACAF doing some work for them. And then I eventually moved to beIN Sports. I was their main NASL broadcaster for 2 years. And then when the league went away, I've worked for Vista World Link, which does a lot of production of the NWSL and the USL, both championship and League One. Now and recently I started working with Univision and TUDN for their coverage of Liga MX and Major League Soccer, all in English. So I'm a fully English language broadcaster in an entirely Spanish broadcasting environment at TUDN. So it's been really fun. I've been at the job now for about 6 months, and I've been calling a lot of football.
Yeah, and for those who don't know too, Chris is the co-host of the Chelsea Mic'd Up podcast, yes. Which is all intensive Blues Chelsea. And you had a chance to go to Chelsea this, actually just a month ago. What was that experience like, and any interesting observations when you were there in London and I guess at Cobham, the training ground, anything? Yes. any highlights of your trip?
Yeah, so it's the actual official Chelsea FC podcast. So they gave us incredible access. It's part of their initiative to work with the United States market and get Americans involved in being supporters of Chelsea. And it was really cool because we sort of set up an interview. Hey, we can talk to Christian Pulisic for about 15, 20 minutes. And then they said, well, why don't we just bring you over here and we can do the interview in person, and we turn it into video. So we took a tour of the stadium. We went to the training ground and got to interview both Christian and Jorginho. We also interviewed the American chairman of the club, Bruce Buck, and told his story. And he actually told the story of how Chelsea was purchased by Roman Abramovich. So some really cool stories he was telling us. We went actually with the away supporters to a match at Tottenham, which is the match that they beat him by 2-0. We were there with the away supporters. So it's a really cool experience, and I'm really enjoying working with them.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Chris. Well, we start off the podcast, as always, as you know, talking about what we've been watching this past week. And what have you been watching?
Yeah, so I've actually commentated three matches over the weekend. So my main remit with TUDN is to broadcast in English a decent amount of the matches that they have on their network in English for Liga MX. So Liga MX actually returned this past weekend. It was match day one, and the curtain raiser was Monarcas Morelia, who made it to the semifinal of the Apertura playoffs. They played Toluca. They actually lost by a 1-0 despite having 75% possession. They dominated the match, but Toluca took advantage of one terrible back pass to get a 1-0 victory. León, who, by the way, if you're a newcomer to Liga MX and are, you know, maybe you're more used to the European style, you're looking for teams that express themselves and play beautiful football, I would recommend León as the team to support. They play, for me, stylistically the best football in Mexico. They finished second in last year's Clausura, first in last year's, excuse me, I got that in reverse. So first in the Clausura and second in the Apertura. They played some great stuff. They beat Querétaro by 3-1, despite losing probably their best player in JJ Macias. And then Pumas beat Pachuca by 2-1. That's the usual Sunday afternoon kickoff. It's either Pumas or Toluca kickoff on a Saturday afternoon. So lots of great Liga MX action. And as a matter of fact, match day two is on the way soon. And Saturday night, the big match is Tigres and America. So that's a rematch of the semifinal from this past, or was it the quarterfinal? Yeah, it was the quarterfinal from this past tournament gone by. So I very much recommend checking that out, because that's probably the two biggest clubs in Mexico right now playing on Saturday night.
One of the things I love about Liga MX too is the short break in between, kind of, you mean the Clausura and Apertura, and you mean it was only I think the Boxing or Christmas Day weekend.
Yeah, it ended up being less than 2 weeks because of the Club World Cup, because Monterrey played in the final, and right. So the final of the Apertura was delayed by 2 weeks, so it ended up being 12 days in between Apertura and Clausura.
So Chris, you're pivotally focused in a pivotal position of being an English language commentator commentating Liga MX games, and we all know that Liga MX is the biggest league in America on the Spanish language side. We know that there's a growing interest in the English language side in terms of more and more Americans watching the league, many of them in Spanish language. But for those who don't know, what's some of the tips that you would have in terms of how they can access TUDNA Extra so that they can watch some of these games with English language commentators such as yourself and others?
Yeah, so it sort of depends on your platform of choice. If you're a Fubo TV subscriber, I mean, it's about as easy as it gets. Go to the soccer section on any given Liga MX match day, and you can find on the menu, so it'll be a listing of a match that is on TUDN in Spanish, and then it'll say underneath it, usually TUDN Extra or TUDN Extra 1 or 2, and it'll have the same game listed twice. If it says Extra, that means the game is in English. And then for your usual cable subscriber, you can go on the TUDN app or the TUDN website, go to the TUDN Extra section and find the game, and it'll ask you to authenticate with your cable provider. Now, we're working with every cable provider, so it's not going to be with all of them, but a lot of the major carriers we have deals with, in terms of all you have to do is log in and you'll be able to watch TUDN Extra and watch some Liga MX in English.
Excellent. Great stuff. All right. So from the past week, my favorite match of the week, the one I enjoyed the most, was Barcelona against Atletico Madrid, the semifinal of the Supercopa. The first half was pretty bland. The second half came alive. It seemed that everything happened. I mean, there was two disallowed goals for Barcelona. And then Barcelona got ripped through the middle of the pitch in terms of both Piqué making a huge mistake on an attempted tackle. But Barcelona defensively and in the midfield are just torn apart. Atletico winning this match 3-2. And another great atmosphere too in the stadium in Saudi Arabia for this game. I didn't expect that going into this tournament. And then we came to the final, Real Madrid against Atletico. You mean a Madrid derby? You mean anticipation of this being a great game? And what a sleeper this one was. A really, really boring game. And it went all the way to penalty kicks. And actually, I hate penalty kicks in competitions like this. If it's a World Cup final, I'll watch it. But I think I switched it off before the penalty kicks even happened, which is probably...
What'd you make of the red card?
I think it's hard to say. I think it was deserved, but I don't know, especially with all the TV replays and everything that we've got going on in terms of all the kind of the technology that we have. Sometimes whether it's red cards or VAR, sometimes I look at it and go in real time, I'm like, yeah, that's definitely a red card, or that's definitely a goal, and then all the different angles, and then I kind of have different opinions. But I wasn't sold on it. But how about you?
Yeah, I mean, the tackle from behind in the final, I mean, it was, to me, just a shocking challenge from Federico Valverde. And so he takes him down from behind. It's one of those where after the match, I think even Diego Simeone, who's sort of on the wrong end of it, was a clean opportunity for Alvaro Morata to go and score the winning goal in the final. And the Argentinians are a little appreciative of what the English call blank housery. So there was a little bit of that from Valverde, and he went and put the tackle in, and it saved Real Madrid in the match and allowed them to win on penalties. But it's a very Luis Suarez handballing off the line in 2010 way to go about winning a trophy.
What about some of the other games that stood out for you, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of European games, I was a big fan of PSG 3, Monaco 3. Saw the scoreline, and even though Bein have taken some criticism for, you know, how inaccessible it is at times, they have certainly done everything they can by the alternate means of not being on AT&T and on Comcast. And they actually have a very good YouTube channel. If you go and find any game that was on their air, there are some pretty long highlights you can find. So I went and found those, and Phil Shane and Gary Bailey, who are both friends of mine, were on the call this one. It was just end-to-end, and Monaco, because they fired Leonardo Jardim, there's this sort of thought that they're a club that's just sort of down in the dumps right now, but they put together a tremendous performance in this game, coming from behind on multiple occasions, taking the haymakers from Neymar and Mbappe, and I just thought this was a really entertaining and fun game, and it just sort of shows that, yeah, maybe Neymar takes a game off every now and again in Ligue 1, but they've actually been, it's been a fairly competitive league this year compared to normal, and then obviously the big one at the weekend in the Premier League was Tottenham and Liverpool. And I just wanted to talk about this from a viewing experience point of view. Mm-hmm. It's so boring now watching Jose Mourinho team set out to defend, because back in the day, when you go back and think about that Dembaba game where yep. Steven Gerrard slips in midfield, and you just think about the Chelsea team that Jose Mourinho picked that day, and he's haggard and he didn't shave and he's wearing this terrible gilet on the touchline. But you kind of always thought that Mourinho could pull it off, that he can go and get a clean sheet at Anfield when he really needed to. And if he's going to set up his team to defend and keep 25% of the ball, that his teams could do it. At Man United and at Spurs, there's just no convincing anyone that Tottenham were going to hang on for 90 minutes there. Roberto Firmino with a lovely touch to get the goal. But when he sets his team up so negatively, you don't even think anymore that it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of leads to, I mean, beyond the fact that the spectacle is killed by his team not wanting to play football, it's killed even more by the fact that you don't have any conviction that it's going to work.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, too. I think Kartik and I recorded a podcast maybe right after he got hired as a Spurs boss. And I think actually we had some audio problems or something happened, but we didn't release the podcast for that particular week. And both Kartik and I were of the opinion that this was a bad move for Spurs in terms of the appointment. My belief back then and still now is that Jose's living on his past laurels in terms of all of the, you know, the mastery, both on the pitch and off the pitch in press conferences, living on those days, many of them at Chelsea, in terms of just how great of a manager he was, of course, Porto too, and other clubs early in his career. And for Spurs to appoint him, I mean, I don't know, to me, they got the wrong Portuguese manager. They should have got Nuno from Wolves, yeah. Somebody that seems to be very disciplined. Wolves, I mean, has a very great shape in terms of the way that they set up, very, very disciplined, but play some attacking football. And we saw that midweek too, with the FA Cup game against Man United, almost winning that one. They had a goal disallowed, but there was a good chance for them to go on and win that game, but they didn't reach that goal. But still, a really, really good manager and a team playing really a lot of people's in the Premier League second favorite team right now, either Sheffield United or Wolves.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, the Spurs-Liverpool match, to me, it was pretty boring, to be honest with you. I mean, it was good to see kind of that goal in that first half, but was not an entertaining match and was not something that, I don't know, Pochettino at least probably would have been a more entertaining game. It probably would have been Liverpool winning 3-2 or something like that. But I'm just not convinced by the Jose appointment. Yes, it probably excites some of the fans at Spurs, but I just have no faith that he's going to do anything, anything incredible with this team.
At least he's not running the cliches out anymore. He's yeah. asked about the Harry Kane injury. He's not, bemoaning to the chairman, asking for, more money in the transfer market. So at least some of those haven't yet arrived yet. But at the very least, his team came out and played a little bit in the second half. I'll give him some credit for that. And he was saying after the match that they probably deserved a point. And I'm not entirely sure he's wrong. They had two gilt-edged chances. Son should have scored and Giovanni Lo Celso should have scored. So for me, it's just sort of dreary to watch those 45 minutes when you know that they're going to go to the break mm-hmm. down by at least a goal. and this defensive tactic of them not even trying to keep possession will have been for naught. And that for me just kind of kills the drama of watching a big Premier League match. And also, are you concerned at all at just how dominant Liverpool is, how just inevitable their every victory seems to be in terms of, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine this week and we were sort of talking about how bad it is for the Premier League, that their title race is over. And what is NBC going to hype? Although this game, we'll get to this in the TV rating section later, did a great number. But this title race is over because not only because they have such a big lead, Liverpool, but because every match that they step on the pitch, they're going to dominate and they're going to win.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that from NBC's perspective, I'm sure they're probably just hating life in terms of Christian Pulisic being injured and thinking like what if? You mean they could have kind of rode that wagon a little bit longer in terms of having him be featured as the, you mean, Chelsea against Newcastle this weekend being the big game and Pulisic maybe having a chance to shine. But yeah, I think it, in many ways it doesn't hurt Liverpool's ratings as much for NBC, but it does hurt the other clubs. So there's probably less Man United fans tuning in, less Arsenal fans, maybe even less Man City fans. I mean, the other clubs that are kind of in the upper half of the table that have just absolutely no chance of catching up with Liverpool, and I think it for those it hurts those numbers. The Liverpool numbers will probably just keep on growing and growing. As more fans, I mean, we saw at the Fan Fest in Miami how many Liverpool fans there were there. It's what, 7:30 in the morning. It seemed to be the Liverpool fans. There were more Liverpool fans than any other club that whole entire weekend. And I think it's for NBC, it's not ideal. Probably from the Liverpool perspective, I think there'll be more and more Liverpool fans probably jumping on the bandwagon a little bit, kind of some of the mainstream pulling those fans in and those numbers continuing to grow. And
that's a really fair point that Liverpool are just such a big club that attracts such a big fan base that it almost doesn't matter what's going on in the rest of the league because their fans have been so dying for this title that maybe even if you've checked out of Liverpool in recent years and now you're just getting back in, you're watching week in, week out because they're actually going to go and do it. And that sort of that thrill is still such a big pull that you're going to watch every single game and enjoy watching it. So maybe not for them, but and I guess, you know, Man City are still putting in incredible performances like they put in against Aston Villa at the weekend, and Man United fans are hoping that their team gets back on. There's always a storyline. I just sort of wonder if the drama being killed for who is going to win matters at all. But it's a fair point that it might not necessarily.
I think it's in some ways it's we're all kind of at the stage now, unless we're Liverpool supporters, hoping for a giant killing, which would be any club other than Liverpool, of course, beating Liverpool. Right. And I mean, this weekend against Man United, they're playing on Sunday. I don't see that happening. I mean, maybe a draw if United are lucky. But maybe that's something that will have people tuning in a little bit more, hoping that one of these clubs, I mean, bound to, you would think, but the way that Liverpool's playing, it just seems to be almost they're playing like invincibles. I mean, they just are playing so strong as a team and have the depth and have very few injury problems that I just can't see anyone beating them. But, I mean, somebody must, you would think. So for some of the other matches I watched this past week, I watched, as I mentioned before, the Man United-Wolves game, the FA Cup replays, Spurs against Borough, some Premier League over the weekend. I watched the South Wales derby, Cardiff City against Swansea City. Ended up being a 0-0 tie, but this one was more entertaining, if anything. In the crowd, they had Sheffield United's Ollie McBurnie, who scored the goal against West Ham on Friday, shows up and is in the away section with the Swansea fans dressed up and just singing and chanting. And that I love personally. I love, I mean, this is so rare. It happens now and again. We've seen this with Man United games where in the away section, I think who was it? There was a few players, I mean, maybe Chris Smalling and others from the past that would go into the away section.
And in Major League Soccer, Chris Wondolowski went viral on social media for doing this for San Jose when he was suspended.
I love that. I don't know. It's always entertaining, and I always enjoy that. Anything else, Chris, that stood out from this past week? Or it doesn't have to be a football match, but anything you heard or listened to that was of interest?
Yeah, I mean, I watched at least a piece of most of the Premier League matches from the weekend. To me, Bournemouth and Watford, the fact that Bournemouth looked like they're heading down, and one of the more interesting talking points is how the teams that are hovering around the relegation zone right now, appear as though they're going to keep their manager after they get relegated. You look right now at the three teams that are in it, Aston Villa, although maybe Dean Smith might go, although he's got some cachet at the club. But Bournemouth and Norwich are two teams that I think Eddie Howe can basically write his exit, however it is that he, like, I can't ever imagine Bournemouth sacking Eddie Howe because everything that they have is because of Eddie Howe. Mm-hmm. And Norwich the same, where Daniel Farke did such a great job of bringing them up, and they seem committed to him. So even though Norwich are 8 points adrift and Bournemouth look absolutely hopeless right now, 2 points from the 2 points from safety, but it's just watching them play sometimes is so dire.
Yeah, and that was something too. The two Robbies did a good job, I think, this Sunday of analyzing that and talking about Eddie Howe and in terms of, you mean, should he be sacked or should he not be sacked? And at some point with Eddie Howe, I mean, if this continues in terms of the way that the club is just playing really poorly, I mean, what is that exit strategy? Is it something that it's amicable, where they get together and say, you know what, let's see it out until the end of the season, or give me a chance in the championship, let me rebuild, or in the transfer window, because they are injury hit big time in terms of missing a couple of strikers, so maybe some key players. So it is one of those things. It's not as if it's a full squad playing really poorly. There are reasons that Bournemouth are in the situation that they're in. But one more thing too, before we move on to the TV streaming news, is that I did watch Aston Villa against Man City on Sunday, and I think within the first, 10 minutes, I ended up switching off the game. It was City went 2-0 ahead, and I'm like, oh gosh, this is going to be one of those games. And of course, ended 6-1. But to me, again, that's another reason, going back to what you said before, Chris, about TV ratings for the Premier League and the possibility that it could be hit by Liverpool being so good is you also, when you have these just totally one-sided games and Villa playing so poorly, to me, it turns off the viewer, and I'm more likely then to switch the channel and go to another match. And I think I went to the Supercopa final and said, okay, I'll just watch that from beginning to end.
I had that game on in the background at the office before I commentated on that Pumas match for Tudene. And I have to be honest, there are times where sometimes domination can be fun to watch. And I think that was one of them because, yes, Aston Villa were pretty hopeless on the day, but Man City were on the top of their game. And I think we saw the same in the Carabao Cup first leg earlier that week where they're away to Manchester United. They're 3-0 up. They could have been 7-0 up. And they were just so good that you can't help but be impressed. I know that opposition has something to do with it, but Man City at the top of their game are still one of the best watches. And I honestly, even though the scoreline kept going up and up, I couldn't take my eyes off it just because of how good Man City were playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's one of those things that I always wonder sometimes. Is it City playing so well, or is it just that Villa was not as good as they could have been? And sometimes it's a little bit of both, and sometimes it is just, you mean, Man City is just playing out of their skin so well that it doesn't matter who the opposition is, it's very difficult to stop them from playing when they're that good. Now let's move on to TV streaming news. And for listeners who are new to the show, the weekly TV streaming news segment focuses on the latest developments that impact your viewing experience. Oftentimes, we have exclusives that we discuss here that aren't publicly announced yet, as well as more scoops on our website, worldsoccertalk.com. So first up is the news about more soccer acquisitions by ESPN+. Just when you thought that they couldn't acquire anything more, they add more on. So ESPN+ has acquired the rights to Copa del Rey in the United States, both in English language and Spanish language. And they began broadcasting many of the Copa del Rey games last weekend. I believe it was in the second round of the competition. They've also announced that if you log on to ESPN Plus now and try to watch any of the games, it'll give you an option. It'll say, okay, do you want to watch this in English or Spanish? And they've had the rights to both English and Spanish for the FA Cup, Serie A, Coppa Italia, and others for a couple of years actually now. But previously, up until this past week, they didn't actually give you an opportunity to watch those in Spanish. But now they have. So it's interesting because FA Cup, I mean, you would think that the majority of people watching that would be English language viewers. Same thing with Serie A, same thing with Coppa Italia. But you now have the option to watch that in Spanish language or in English language. So just as Tudene has been a Tudene Extra has been a trailblazer, It looks like ESPN is picking up the steam too to try to match that in terms of giving viewers more options.
Now, of course, I think it's fundamental as well that ESPN does this for all of their soccer products, because ultimately you're leaving viewers on the table if you don't. I think, and I think that's very often lost in the streaming wars between all these streaming companies, is the Spanish language audience, and even not even just in the. In the sports space, but in the just the general entertainment space, I think you're actually seeing Netflix ramp up some Spanish language programming on their sort of offerings. And I just think in general, you look at all these companies, you know, HBO Max, and you look at Hulu and Disney Plus, and all this. There isn't really anyone that's targeting, you know, Latin viewers. And I think having that play a role in the streaming wars, I think, is a massive part. And so that ESPN Plus is doing this, especially with a pretty prime Spanish language property, is a great job by them. And obviously, my company, I'm biased, but TUDN is doing a great job. They put all the Champions League on digital on the TUDN Extra channels, and a lot of European matches, as well as CONCACAF Nations League, now that that's sort of a competition that's up and running. So I think the Spanish language market is sort of criminally underthought in this industry, and I'm glad that ESPN is covering this.
Yeah, and soccer is the perfect vehicle for that too, to offer options for the bilingual audience, or the Spanish speakers, or the English speakers. So many different choices. So yeah, hats off to both ESPN Plus and TUDN Extra. In regards to the Copa del Rey rights, beIN Sports previously had the rights, but according to one of my sources, there were a couple of reasons why they passed on the rights or the opportunity to go ahead and renew those. First was the exorbitant cost that the Spanish Football Federation were wanting the rights to sell the rights for. And second, the prevalence of illegal streaming is making it difficult for broadcasters to make or break even from acquiring soccer rights when so many of the viewers are watching games illegally. And this is something I think that we will probably hear more about in the future too, in terms of just the propensity of illegal streaming and how easy it is to actually watch those games illegally is going to have an impact on acquisition costs, in terms of, why should a broadcaster pay, millions and millions for the rights to a competition if a large percentage of those viewers are watching it illegally and they can't monetize that? They can't get any advertising dollars from that. They can't get basically nothing. It's on the underground.
I understand their viewpoint. To me, piracy is not a new issue, though. I think it's something that, I remember when I was in high school, I was looking for ways to, to pirate events that weren't, being broadcasted in this country. And when soccer was less prominent on television, you'd try and find ways to watch events. I don't think this is a new phenomenon. I can understand, though, how it might start affecting the bottom line dollar amount that you want to bid on something, because you lose that audience. But to me, especially in the streaming era, beIN Sports at least is on some terrestrial, cable providers. And so there are some homes. To me, the purely digital players are the ones that are more vulnerable to it. And yet, I don't know, from my personal vantage point, this might be a privilege vantage point, but I'll always pay if the choice is, obviously, the Champions League is available on a variety of platforms, but I'm going to figure out a way to watch it on TUDN Extra. And if I don't have it on TUDN Extra, then I'll pay the $2.99 for a game of BR Live, because it's worth not having to chase a stream that's, going to eventually cut out, that's going to be swamped by ads, that's going to attack my computer. Like, I will burn the calories and find a way to watch the game on the up and up. So that's my vantage point. I understand there are a lot of people out there that have figured out VPNs and ways of streaming around events, but I'm not necessarily sure that piracy is a new problem, although I certainly understand from beIN's standpoint, given what's happening with the Middle East and their situation with, is it called BLQ or something like that?
That's right, yeah.
And so I understand how it's sort of at the forefront of the thoughts of the company, but I don't think piracy is really that new of an issue, do you?
Yeah, not new, but it is becoming, it seems to be more prevalent, just as more and more games are going to streaming and streaming only. It seems to become more of an issue, but it's one of those kind of, just those kind of dark areas where we don't really know. Nobody really knows how many people are streaming. There's estimates out there of some huge numbers, but how are those measured? And who's measuring those and who's actually saying what those numbers are? Are they inflating them to make it sound better, sound a worse of a situation than it actually is, or are they underestimating it? Yeah, this is definitely one we'll cover in the future in terms of a topic, both on the website and on this podcast. A few quick hits before, Chris, you have some big news. And the first quick hit is Sling TV has removed FS2 from Sling Blue, shifting it to the Sports Extra package. So to access both FS1, FS2, and NBCSN on Sling Blue, you'll need Sling Blue plus Sports Extra. It'll cost you $40 per month instead of the previous $25 per month. FS2, at this point, mostly is Bundesliga games. So this is really going to be more of a hit for the Bundesliga audience in terms of if you had Sling Blue, now you have to pay about $15 extra to get access to those games on FS2. Second of all is NBC Sports reporter Neil Ashton has left Sky Sports and The Sun and NBC Sports to start up his own media consultancy business. His first client is Manchester United. NBCSN said that they will hire a replacement, but no date has been announced yet for when he or she will start.
I'm mildly disappointed that he's leaving the Sunday Supplement program. I don't believe it's available with NBC Gold, but it's actually available as a podcast. And right. on a Sunday morning when there isn't a ton of original content being pushed out on that platform, I actually used to listen to Sunday Supplement fairly often. So hopefully they can find a suitable replacement for him.
Yeah, actually, and the replacement is Jackie Oatley from
she's brilliant.
BBC Sport. Yeah, so it's a good replacement. And I agree with you, Chris, in terms of the quality of content on that show. Oftentimes, we would get to hear a lot from the journalists and reporters in the UK on that show, given different opinions. And sometimes that was probably the best place and the only place we could get to hear some of those folks. And it was a really kind of high-level intellectual show. And I'm sure Jackie will continue it at that kind of that rate. But yeah, Neil Ashton definitely to me is a big loss for NBC Sports. It'll be interesting to see who they replace him with for kind of the Premier League insider role. Soccer streaming service Fanatis, who is based in Miami, has received $10 million in funding from a venture capitalist. The money is going to be used to expand the service globally. It's already available in the United States and select countries. Now they're looking at global expansion. And last but not least, Telemundo has expressed interest in acquiring the rights to Copa America 2020, which will be held in Argentina and Colombia. Meanwhile, Telemundo has confirmed that their coverage of the women's soccer in the Olympics this summer will feature more coverage than ever before. And for the Copa America 2020, that is the Spanish language rights. So they're interested, and we'll have to wait and see if they do get that acquisition. But also on the English language side, we'll have to wait and see on that one too. Last year's competition, the Copa America 2019, we didn't find out that the English language rights had been acquired by ESPN until March of 2019. So there's still some time for a possible English language acquisition there to a broadcaster to pick up with those rights. And Chris, over to you. This is some interesting news.
Yeah, so with CBS soon to have the Champions League starting in 2021, I was just sort of looking for any news that are that's sort of in this area. And CBS All Access is actually lining up a bid for NFL streaming rights. And I've actually was hearing on other sports media podcasts. Well, this is my preferred sports media podcast. I was listening to others and they were basically saying that this is a really big part of the CBS and the Viacom strategy is really pushing the CBS All Access service to be a competitor. And they're actually going for live rights to the NFL to be on their platform. Now, the NFL is considering dividing up their rights that they have for the NFL Red Zone Channel, which is a very popular product, which basically is a whip around show of every game on a Sunday afternoon going from scoring play to scoring play. And right now there's, half the package belongs to DirecTV and the other half is basically a cable only outfit. And then there's the NFL Sunday Ticket, which is out of market, both on cable and on terrestrial television, which is owned by DirecTV, and also by DirecTV online via their app. You have to be subscribed to DirecTV Sunday Ticket. So they're thinking about splitting up these packages into more a digital friendly sort of way of getting people to watch it. And CBS All Access is apparently considering bidding for these. So it's interesting to me that they don't want this to just be, you know, the Champions League and then the library of CBS shows. It seems like they have a real content strategy that I would imagine involves some serious cash if they're bidding for NFL rights.
Yeah, and right now, CBS All Access, if you ask most people on the streets, I mean, what is it and what programs does it have? Most people would say, I think Star Trek, I think some of the Star Treks are on there, and yeah. I think The Good Fight, I think it is. So, but it's mostly...
I think Jordan Peele, the director of Get Out, has an original version of The Twilight Zone, I think, on there.
Okay, yeah, that's right. So most of it is drama shows or kind of entertainment shows, for lack of a better word. And with the acquisition of the UEFA Champions League for 2021, the summer onwards, with probably all of the games going to be available on CBS All Access, and with the possibility that if they do line up a bid for the NFL streaming rights and do acquire a portion of those, that makes it an incredibly attractive, one of those go-to must-have streaming services, just like ESPN Plus is now. And we're at a stage, Chris, where with ESPN Plus gobbling up all the rights, it seems, especially on the English language side, in terms of, we could be in a few years from now that really, in terms of, if you wanted to watch the Premier League and La Liga and Liga MX and, say, the Champions League, is that, and maybe Major League Soccer too, kind of together there, it could be one of those things that you can say, well, I want ESPN Plus. I want Fubo in order to get Tudoene, in order to get NBC, in order to get beIN Sports, and of course the Univision channels too, is that you could end up with, and then CBS All Access to get the Champions League. You could say, okay, those might be the three go-to streaming services, CBS All Access, ESPN Plus, and Fubo, or not Fubo, Sling TV, or one of the other many other streaming services out there. And that could give you the lion's share of all the soccer coverage that's out there, unless you want to go really niche and go, Fanatis for Superliga Argentina or other leagues. What's your take on that? Do you see that's the way we're heading, or do you see just lots of changes and upheaval over the coming years as rights become available to other broadcasters?
We mentioned venture capitalists getting involved with Fanatis. I think that's sort of the way that a lot of these companies are heading right now is which companies are going to have the capital to really draw something attractive to their platform. And I think ultimately there is a finite amount of dollars. You didn't even mention NBC Gold in that equation. If you're a fan of a specific Premier League team that isn't regularly featured on NBCSN. For me, I'm looking at the prospect of CBS All Access and wondering, obviously Tudoene will continue to have the rights to the Champions League. How are they going to make this attractive? And things like this is how you make it attractive. But you wonder who has this endless reservoir of cash, because ultimately these sports rights are more expensive. And I think my ultimate takeaway is ultimately this content is going to end up somewhere. Now the question is, will consumers pay for it? But really for me, who this is the biggest boon for is the holders of the live rights, the leagues themselves, because the NFL, even though there was a serious conversation 3 years ago about where their ratings were heading, they're going to see a significant increase in the rights that they're going to command. The NBA, their ratings are down this year, but I would imagine it'll be a similar thing. There'll be four broadcast companies and nine streaming companies that are going to want the rights to their games. We haven't even mentioned companies like Amazon or DAZN or AT&T with their Bleacher Report live service. So there are so many companies that want in this game, and live sports is such a valuable product that I can only take away that these companies or that these leagues are in such a good position. Major League Soccer is heading soon towards a rights renewal cycle, and even though maybe their ratings, although I imagine they'll be in a better position this year being on network television more often, they're going to encounter a good market because all these companies want live sports rights.
Absolutely. Lots of competition. We've seen that this week with reports about One Soccer interested in the Canadian MLS rights when they come up for bid. The more competition, the better for these leagues. And that's the thing. I guess at the end of the day, in terms of these streaming services. So whether it is CBS All Access, whether it is ESPN Plus, and whether it is, say a Fubo that has access to the Premier League and La Liga and Liga MX, my concern overall is making sure that we don't just get the world feed. Yeah, the world feed for certain opportunities, certain games is okay. But personally, I want to hear the local commentators. And again, it depends on who the world feed is and what the quality level is. But that's my concern, is with a lot of these acquisitions of games, we're getting less and less of the local commentators, and we're getting more of the world feed, which is I'm sure cheaper.
Of native production, really. And I think that's something that really you don't see. I've had, on very rare occasion, like you watch, clips online from DAZN Germany, and they have a full, touchline reporter team, and there it's a full production for what is ultimately a streaming product. And it's kind of strange to me that other countries are leading the way in this regard. Now, we haven't really seen in this country a domestic product go to a streaming company in the way that even Amazon for the Premier League did for two match days. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen, although, I mean, Amazon for the NFL, they have the rights to Thursday Night Football, and they did a lot of production. They had not just, one commentary, they had four or five in varying languages. And, there's an all-woman team, and there's a UK team with Derek Ray and Tommy Smith. So there are all kinds of productions. But I'm very much with you both from the perspective of a consumer, but also from a very self-important commentator that wants to continue to work. Please, production companies and streaming companies, hire commentators and hosts and analysts, and continue to keep our burgeoning industry going.
Absolutely. Yeah, and probably Serie A in the Bundesliga, when the Bundesliga starts up in August on ESPN Plus, are probably the closest we've gotten to a large league, soccer league, going to an all-streaming. It's not even all-streaming, though. You mean we have the game of the week on Serie A, usually Mark Donaldson and Matteo Bonetti. And with the Bundesliga, we'll have to wait and see. It was supposed to be four games a season on ESPN or ESPN2 or ESPN News. We'll have to wait and see on that, too. And one more thing, too, about ESPN Plus is that it's been very slow and incremental in terms of any changes to that streaming service. So we just saw the Spanish language options being added this past week. The other thing, though, too, with ESPN Plus is that finally, I think post-match, usually it would just have a screen that would say end of event, and that's it. It was like, oh, come on. Now they have some in-house promos. They got talking about 30 for 30 and talking about some of the other things that they have going on. So and that took, almost 2 years to put in place. Over to the TV rating side, and the big number, the big change is that the most watched Premier League game of the season, which would be the most watched European club game of the season, happened this past weekend. We talked about it earlier, and that's Tottenham Hotspur against Liverpool. This game attracted or averaged 1.484 million viewers. It was on NBC, the flagship NBC and Telemundo. So those numbers are combined. I think the NBC number was, about 1.1 to 1.2 million. And then the Telemundo number was about 295,000 people watching that game. So big numbers for Liverpool and Spurs, of course. Just wish the game could have been more exciting, but hey, you can't have everything.
Yeah, and I think this sort of goes back to our earlier conversation that Liverpool, when they're going to be in this window, have the real chance to draw some massive numbers. We only have the TV schedule through February, and they have another network NBC match on, presumably given the time period, Saturday, February 15th, away to Norwich. But if they have one or two more Big Six clashes that are in that Saturday NBC network window, they have another one against Watford as well, late February, the more that they're on in that window, I think they might continue to shatter records, because every Liverpool fan is going to be tuning in to watch their team win the title. And I think it's funny, because even though I'm kind of saying that there isn't really any drama in it, I think the lack of drama might almost be an attractive part of it for Liverpool, because you just sort of get to enjoy this wild ride of winning the trophy without it being a wild ride. It's just sort of this unbridled display of enthusiasm every single week. And you just get to enjoy watching your team win this trophy. And I think that's what's ultimately going to end up happening here, is that Liverpool are going to end up drawing some massive numbers, similar to how Leicester did, even though that wasn't really that close of a title race. Liverpool, I think, are going to draw some massive numbers just because of how much fun their own supporters are having.
Yep, absolutely. And it does remind me a lot, too, of Arsenal's invincible season. One of those things, the way that Arsenal went through that season, very reminiscent of this one. And then the second number I'll point out, Chris, and this is something that's right down your alley, Burnley against Chelsea, 588,000 people watched this one on NBCSN on Saturday. To be honest, it seemed to be like another one-sided, very comfortable victory for Chelsea. But we did have one question from one of the listeners that I'll pose to you. And that was from Daniel. And Daniel says, please help me understand how NBCSN selects which game is televised in a time slot. Right now, I'm stuck watching Chelsea against Burnley, which is arguably the least compelling matchup in this time slot. Pulisic is injured and not in the squad, and Chelsea is predictably up 3-0 with 40 minutes left. So why choose this matchup? Help me understand. What's your take on this, Chris?
Well, wasn't the other big match in that window Manchester United and Norwich, and that one finished 4-0?
That's right.
I don't know if maybe they can put the goal rush show on so that at least when a game is no longer interesting, they can at least flip to the other games. But I don't know what you'd. I mean, I guess what ended up being the most interesting match is Leicester Southampton. Mm-hmm. But NBC, when given the choice of putting Man United or Chelsea on, would always put Man United or Chelsea on over Leicester Southampton. So I mean, they have to make a choice on which game to put on. They presumably have a formula that includes, you know, big club and American audience, and obviously these choices. I think they can probably make them fairly late in the day, considering they own the rights to all the games. But I'd imagine at a certain point they have to lock in. We're going to put Chelsea on in this window, hoping that Pulisic is going to play. But I don't know if the other choice was really that great. I guess unfortunately to the reader or the listener, I think the only solution to this is buy NBC Sports Gold, and if you want to watch a different game, watch a different game.
And that was the thing too, when we had NBC Sports Live Extra, where it was free as long as you had a cable or a satellite subscription, and you could change a channel. You could say, okay, without having to pay for NBC Sports Gold, you could say, okay, let me change a channel. Well, not change a channel, but go to the streaming service or whatever it is to watch those other games. If it was Norwich against Man United or Southampton Leicester, or whichever game it would be. So these days we're pretty much more stuck, and it seems to be that NBC Sports is showing less games on CNBC and USA like they used to in the past. They're trying to get those audiences to watch that one match and kind of bump up those numbers a little bit. And then we saw with the Chelsea Burnley a viewing number, 588,000 people is pretty decent. Speaking of pretty decent, Chris, a couple of actually a number that came out of MLS that you wanted to share.
Yeah, so the MLS Super Draft was last week, and I was watching with interest because my local club, Inter Miami, had two of the first three picks, and they picked a winger and a defender, a center forward and a defender. There was some kitschy things that they did with the broadcast. They had David Beckham ready to surprise the number one overall pick, Robbie Robinson, with a Skype. It was slightly awkward, but it was still fun. And then Nashville, who had the second pick, they sent us a bus of supporters with the reporters, Susanna Collins, and I believe their general manager, Mike Jacobs, over to the house of the second pick, and they were like singing on his lawn as the pick was announced. Then he walked outside and realized all the supporters were there, and it was a really cool scene. But in the end, on social, so they ended up putting this on the ESPN app, on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, and all the other ESPN platforms. 3.3 million views. Now, that is not viewers, but that is at least views of someone starting the broadcast. I watched on both. I think I watched on three of the platforms. It was just I was flipping around them just to see which one had the least delay. And you saw decent audiences. They were carrying those broadcasts. So ESPN trying a little bit atypical. I can't imagine they can clear 2 hours for the Super Draft on a linear network, given its decreasing relevance. But they're finding alternate ways to do it and making it interesting, and fair play, because it seemed like they got some decent viewership out of it.
Yeah, and listeners, if you did miss the Nashville pick, definitely check it out on whether it's on YouTube or I'm sure on the MLS website. It was really some good video of him getting picked and the fans.
Yeah, Jack Maher is the center back's name.
Exactly. It kept coming to the house. That was pretty neat. And then, Chris, this is a kind of a British expression, but I think Major League Soccer must be licking their chops at the at the prospect of something happening, perhaps in the next few days to the next week or so, that's going to change things, significantly. what's your take on the potential acquisition or hiring of Chicharito?
Yeah, and I think this is the probably the whale for Major League Soccer that they've been chasing. Yes, they got Zlatan in; he's a big one. Obviously, Messi and Ronaldo are still to come, and we'll see when the point in their career in which they would even make that decision arrives. But Chicharito is probably the player that they've most wanted in their league, and the fact they're getting him at a decent age, at 31 years of age. Now, this one is not officially over the line yet, but all suggestions are that Chicharito is moving from Sevilla to LA Galaxy, and again, well done to the LA Galaxy for maintaining this relevance as they have the oncoming threat of LAFC as such a great side and drawing great crowds. They will always have a big star at the LA Galaxy. And Chicharito, for me, I think this is going to be even underrated in how big this is for the league, because while it won't draw the world headlines that Zlatan did or even Wayne Rooney did, locally in both the U.S. and in Mexico, this is going to be a massive deal. Mm-hmm. Chicharito is by far the biggest star amongst the Mexican-American population, and of course the Mexican population. There are going to be a ton of people that go to their games in the Latin American market, so when LA Galaxy go away to Houston, when LA Galaxy go away to Dallas and to Chicago and the other cities where there are big Mexican-American populations, he will draw big crowds, and he will draw massive television ratings locally in Spanish, I imagine. For wherever the LA Galaxy local rights holder is, they will have increased relevance in shirt sales, and also from a personal standpoint, the first to the end match of the season for Major League Soccer is Houston Dynamo hosting LA Galaxy. That is going to be a huge number on the Univision network. Chicharito for me is going to draw a huge amount of interest, more for me in terms of TV ratings than even Zlatan did. I know Zlatan drew some big numbers for some El Tráfico matches, but week in, week out, I think Chicharito is probably the biggest draw that they've had in the league since David Beckham arrived in 2007.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised actually if he actually outdoes Beckham. If you look at Beckham's numbers that first season where he, especially some of the games, it was like a game in against the Red Bulls, I think it was, mm-hmm. in New York, which had a big audience for that one. The first game he played where there was a Beckham cam that followed him. That one was a little bit too much. But I wouldn't be surprised if over the course of a season, Chicharito's numbers, as long as he stays healthy, as long as he signs for Major League Soccer, could be some massive numbers. And this could be a huge boost. The timing is perfect in terms of the next TV deal at the end of the 2021 season. And MLS is going to be hoping and praying that this happens, because it is going to have a huge, huge impact. Moving on to listener mailbag. First up is Nash Rambler. He says that the further discussion this week about your guest from last week, John Nicholson, has prompted me to ask you, Kartik and Chris, and Chris in this case, about domestic broadcast rights for La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, and Ligue 1. In Britain, there seems to be a continuing angst regarding the Premier League broadcast rights being restricted to subscription providers, Sky, BT Sport, and Amazon. And my understanding is that the same situation exists in Spain, Italy, Germany, and France for the top flight leagues. Is there the same level of discontent among the fans and the general public in these countries as there is in Britain about having to subscribe to cable satellite streaming to watch their football? This is a great question. I don't have a ton of experience with this. I know that, for example, Sky Sports, if you're in Germany, Sky Germany is huge. If you go to Italy, Sky Italia is huge. In Germany, a lot of the games are actually, the rights are by DAZN, if you want to watch a lot of the Bundesliga games. And so in the UK, most of my family or most of my relatives in the UK, very few of them have Sky Sports. Most of them have just free-to-air, so BBC, ITV, Channel 4. And that's how they watch their entertainment or news and occasionally sport. And that's why, in many ways, that Match of the Day from the BBC is still such an institution, such a huge show in the UK. In terms of the other countries, I believe there still is a lot of angst against the cable satellite companies, but I can't say from experience how much of a level of angst there is, because I have not lived in those countries. I do not know. What about you, Chris? Do you have any take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been to the UK on a few occasions and been looking to find, you know, places to go and watch games. And usually, I mean, there was one time I had one Airbnb that had Sky, and so I was able to watch. And it's actually, it's great if you're willing to pay for it. I mean, yeah, in terms of the breadth of channels and the programming, even on the Sky Sports Premier League channel, I actually would love to see more of it here on NBC in terms of, you know, Premier League years and even just rerunning old games. They have all kinds of great content on there. But it is something where, you know, for example, something more niche, you know, from my standpoint, I remember when I was there once with a group of friends, we wanted to watch college football there. It was on BT, but you had to go on their website to find a pub near you that was showing that has BT. And then you had to somehow convince the guy behind the bar to put BT to the ESPN channel on so they could watch college football in a British pub. So it is generally a pub culture, from my understanding, that if you don't have Sky and you want to watch a live match, you have to go down the pub, grab yourself a pint, and you can watch the game there. And I think the pubs do pretty well with that. But I can certainly understand their frustration that I was just sort of going through pretty cursorily the places that have the rights, and it is very often streaming or on cable, and so that's not as big of a market as it is over here.
Right.
And I think as well, the leagues over here prioritize putting things on free to air. The NFL in particular, I don't think we'll ever have a big event not on free to air, other than, you know, Monday Night Football. And I just think that The leagues here prioritize it too much that they're willing to take a little bit less. And the companies have enough financial power to still compete at the highest level, even if they are free to air and not cable. But at the same time, I understand that this is a growing trend around the world, but it's where the money is. And I think ultimately these leagues are going to continue to take the money from the streaming companies and the satellite companies because they have the money and they're willing to pay over the top for rights compared to the free to air companies. And I think that's why they ultimately end up with the rights.
Yeah, and in the UK specifically too, in the last 12 months, most of the games from La Liga have not been available. There I forgot the name of the company, 11 Sports, I think.
11 Sports, yeah.
Yeah, last season had the rights to La Liga, and then they went bust, or they didn't have enough money to actually end up paying for the rights. So then the La Liga games, I think ITV picked up a few of those games.
They're actually, so I have experience with this. So okay. I believe they're at a company called Premier Sports because
yep.
I went and found it because on the night of El Clasico, I was in London on my Chelsea trip, and we were sort of looking for a place, and there was one bar in, like, you know, those four tube stops over that we had to go and find that was showing the Clasico, and they had this sports channel. It was actually funny because in the bar, they had like this tiered seating. It was like this row of benches, and it was packed with people that had also basically just gone on Google and found where could I watch El Clasico in London, and they all packed into this one bar that seemed to have this package. But yeah, it is that difficult to find at times.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Premier League is so big in Britain that it pretty much, other than say the Champions League or other competitions, but it is the big one. JP says, I might be of a similar vintage as Kartik. What I recall most about NBC Sports back in the day wasn't Wimbledon, although I did watch it. It was the NBA on NBC every Sunday once football season ended. They got the package from CBS at the perfect time, golden age of the NBA in the early 1990s. Magic and Bird still around, but nearing the end. Isaiah and Detroit finally getting over the hump. Great fun teams in Portland, Utah, Seattle, Golden State, and Phoenix out west. Michael Jordan was about to embark on his complete domination. The New York Knicks were actually relevant too. So there's some memories of NBC back in the day.
And still the best theme song for any television product, the NBA and NBC music, is actually composed by John Tesh, and it is absolutely delightful, and it's too bad that it is now defunct.
And last but not least, Eric Boyer says, curious to know if you've heard what is the fate of Fox Soccer Plus. With the Bundesliga heading to ESPN Plus in the summer, I was curious if they would A, keep their AFL and rugby league properties, B, let those properties lapse and not renew, or C, shut down the channel completely. I'm a watcher of both the AFL and rugby league, so I was wondering if I should cancel my subscription or just keep it going. Any insights would be appreciated. And it's interesting with Fox Soccer Plus because that streaming service is not owned by Fox Soccer. It's actually owned by Perform, which was the company that is now DAZN. So in many ways, it's licensing. It's kind of using the Fox Soccer name to have a service, and I'm sure Fox gets a percentage of the commissions that come through. It's probably one of the reasons why Fox Soccer Plus, Fox Soccer Match. Actually, no, let me go back. Actually, Eric's question was Fox Soccer Plus, which is completely different.
Yeah.
I was thinking about Fox Soccer Match Pass. Okay, forget that. Well, Fox Soccer Match Pass, let me just finish that up. The likelihood that that will continue, who knows? When the Bundesliga goes, there's going to be so little left with that. Maybe they rename it to, rugby and Australian League or something other than Fox Soccer Match Pass. That to me, and that's the reason that it's so expensive, is because it's Fox, I'm sure, is getting some of the commissions, but Perform is getting the most of them. But going back to Eric's real question, which I missed first, but I got it now. Fox Soccer Plus. I mean, to me, that network, that channel has always had a misnomer, the name itself anyway. There's so little soccer content on there that is live. A lot of it is replays. A lot of it is other sports such as rugby and AFL. It originated, so the reason that we have Fox Soccer Plus was that was the old Satanta channel. And when Fox Soccer acquired Satanta in the US, they changed the name to Fox Soccer Plus. Back then, it made sense. It made total sense. But what's the fate of it? I don't know. I would think that perhaps if it's making money, they keep it and maybe change the name. Or they can look at perhaps changing that to some other channel that could be something completely different. What about you, Chris? Have you been? You're an avid watcher of Fox Soccer Plus.
I'm actually not, but I was just going through my guide. I have AT&T UVerse, and I have Fox Soccer Plus available. They don't have any soccer programming for the next 24 hours. It's not at time of recording. I was actually amazed because I was going through my AT&T UVerse that I get with my building, and because I wanted to add HBO, and I was just going through all the options for fun. And I could not believe that Fox Soccer Plus is $15 a month.
Yeah,
I guess. If you're a devoted Australian rules football fan, then you are going to buy that. But I just would have figured that given how they've lost rights, and it used to be, the home of the Scottish Premiership, and there were actual things on there that they haven't even lowered the price point. It seems as though it's a product that, I would imagine at some point is going to go to a streaming product or something like that. And even like the big rugby rights, it seems like NBC has those and they're turning those into a streaming service. So I would imagine all these things are heading the way of streaming. And it is actually a very quaint relic of the past that there is a, pay subscription channel that is just for sport, that it just seems to be for one channel, that you get one lineup of programming. This seems very much in the era of streaming to be a bit of a relic.
Yeah, and it's been neglected over the years. So it's really been kind of left alone and not much effort put into it. Eric, going back to your question, should you cancel or just keep it going? If it's an annual subscription, I would not renew it. If it's a way to do it on a month-to-month basis, I would do that until we know exactly what the future of that channel is going to be. We should know more, hopefully, this summer. Right now, it's almost like a zombie channel, just going on and on and on with very little content. They do usually have one Bundesliga game on a Saturday, one of the smaller games that's not on FS1 or FS2. So, listeners, we want you to have your say. Any questions about zombie channels or in terms of commentating, in terms of production values, in terms of streaming options, or different ways to watch soccer, anything that relates to that, we'd love to hear from you. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Chris, for those listeners who are interested, especially if they're Chelsea fans, where can they find Chelsea Mic'd Up? And any other plugs you'd like to give, feel free.
Yeah, wherever you're listening to this podcast, we're available on all of them. If you're into Chelsea Football Club, we have a weekly podcast out every week. We have guests from the club. We've recently had, as I mentioned, Jorginho, Christian Pulisic. We've had Tammy Abraham on the podcast as well. I believe we're due to have Reece James on the show next month. And then all my commentary work right now is on Tudene, so check it out, Tudene Extra. I have four matches this weekend, one every night, and then on Sunday I have the afternoon kickoff. And then the MLS season will be get back going soon, so we'll have that in about a month and a half from now. So wherever you are watching events on Tudene, imagine you can watch them in English on Tudene Extra, and check it out, tudene.tv or the Tudene app.
Excellent. Well, Chris, thanks for being on the show. We really appreciate it. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We greatly appreciate it. And heading into another weekend of soccer from around the world, we've got the Liverpool-Man United match on Sunday. We've got Liga MX week two, as well as lots of other games from around the world. Chris, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.